What's up? Welcome to Children of the Watch, a Star Wars show. I'm Alex Maxwell, and joining me tonight is Jonah Marie Macias. What's up, Jonah Marie? How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Super excited to be back and talking about Bad Batch.
The Bad Batch recap is on. I'm so excited because this episode was just incredible. I love this episode. I feel like each and every week, this series gets better and better. Like, and I know that there's been some people who are like, well, I want, you know, the big things to happen every single, well, that, I mean, we've got like 16 episodes of this, I think. You know, you've got to space it out a little bit. And just because something big doesn't happen necessarily in the episode doesn't mean that it's not important, because I think a lot of important things happen in this episode. So I'm so excited to break down this episode and talk about how it impacts the greater Star Wars galaxy. But before we do, let's just kind of do some of the business and then we'll jump in. If you're not following Jonah Marie on Twitter, what are you doing? She's an awesome follow. Jonah Marie, tell the people who you are, how can they follow you, all that stuff.
Yeah. So listeners can follow me on Twitter with the handle at @BlueJagEyes. And that's inspired by Captain Rex, who I hope we will be seeing soon. And they can also listen to me and my mom talking about the animated shows on the Geeky Bubble podcast.
Nice. And that is a wonderful podcast. I'm a huge fan of the Geeky Bubble podcast. So make sure you check that out as well. They do a great job breaking down all the content, especially on the animated side. That is kind of like, I would say, your big focus on that. And so I'm so glad that you guys are doing that and that you're on the show today. So you can also follow Children of the Watch on Twitter and Instagram at COT Watch. And we have a Patreon, which we dropped not just one episode today. We dropped two episodes today on the Patreon. So if you like this content, you can go get more content over on the Patreon. Jonah Marie, are you ready to break down?
I am.
Episode five.
More than ready.
Okay. So the writer of this episode is Tamara Betcher Wilkinson, and the director is Stuart Lee. Now, Jonah Marie, are you familiar with any of their previous work? Is Stuart Lee someone who's been involved in the animation side of Star Wars?
Yeah, definitely. If I remember correctly, I saw that name in Rebels and
yes,
Clone Wars. Yeah. So yeah, it's definitely a very well-known director in the animated side of Star Wars.
Yeah, and I saw the writer this past weekend talking. I mean, she was just super excited to be able to write for Star Wars. I saw that expression on Twitter, and I thought that was really cool, you know, because I think that's almost everyone's dream. If you enjoy Star Wars, to be a part of it in some way like that, that would just be an incredible experience.
Yeah. I would love to just even sit in the room and see them all break down the season and how they plan to write it all out. But yeah, that's amazing that she got to be part of it.
Right. Yeah, it's really cool. Also, for the people in the chat on YouTube and on Twitter, if you want to get your questions ready, be ready for the questions at the end, because we will talk through some of your questions at the end of this episode and discuss them. And that led to, I feel like last week, that led to some of our best discussion last week in terms of thinking about who could possibly be on the Bad Batch in the future. Also, the battle for Kamino, if that's a possibility, that was some good stuff.
Yeah, seriously. I couldn't stop thinking about it, actually.
I really hope that it happens now. So, all right, let's just jump into this episode. We start off with the episode with the Havoc Marauder, which is the Bad Batch's ship, is traveling through hyperspace. And on the ship, Tech is giving Omega Crosshair's old comm link, which I don't know about you, but like, giving that to Omega, number one, super cool for Omega, but I was wondering like how the rest of the crew was kind of like internalizing that of, okay, we're giving some stuff away that used to be Crosshair's to her. So how do you think they feel about that?
Yeah, I think they're still, and I remember this was a question I had brought up early on because I wanted to see their emotions about what happened with Crosshair. And my mom and several other people brought up the fact that they're just compartmentalizing, and that's what soldiers tend to do. And I think maybe in the back of their mind, they still think maybe that they can get Crosshair back in some way. So yeah. It's not like a complete loss right now. It's just temporary. We will figure things out.
Yeah, Omega's borrowing it until Crosshair gets back. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right on that. And I love this scene as Tech tells Omega not to play with it, and she immediately begins playing with it. I just love that scene.
Yeah, but you know, she was just testing it out. And I really love that you see that childlike behavior from her and still see the more mature and often reliable side of her later on in the episode.
Yeah, she has a good balance of like, she knows when to be a kid, but she also knows when it's time to do the mission, which I think is very helpful for the Bad Batch, right? Like, she has a good head on her shoulder, I think. She's pretty cool. So we learn that they're on their way to Ord Mantell. And if that planet sounds familiar to you, it's because Han Solo mentions it, that he ran into a bounty hunter on Ord Mantell in The Empire Strikes Back. So like, we've heard that planet before. We've kind of seen it in some other stuff, but we're actually going to be going to that planet in this episode. And I thought that was a cool connection there. I like that sort of thing.
Yeah. And it also, and I keep forgetting to look into this, but I'm pretty sure it showed up in the Son of Dathomir comics with Maul. Yeah.
Which the Son of Dathomir comics, those were basically unproduced Clone War episodes that had to do with Darth Maul and the Mandalorians and stuff like that. And so if you have not read that, absolutely go read that, because it's really good. And it informs a lot of what happens in that final Siege of Mandalore arc on the Clone Wars with the Mandalorians and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's also, if I remember correctly, is the home base for the Black Sun.
Yep.
And we know that, you know, that whole underworld aspect is briefly mentioned with the guild, which we'll obviously talk more about later.
Yeah, we've got a lot to talk about the Bounty Hunters Guild, because I do want to talk about that. We'll come back to it. So Omega asks why they're going to Ord Mantell if they're supposed to be laying low. And we learn that Hunter really wants to find out who hired Fennec Shand. Now, they don't know her name yet. They don't know her name is Fennec Shand, but they want to find out who she is and why she's after them. And then Echo mentions that he has an informant on Ord Mantell named Cid, C-I-D. I was trying to listen to that the first time. I was like, are they saying Sid, sick? I don't know what they're saying. So I had to turn on the subtitles.
Yeah. Good practice.
Yes, it is a good practice. So he's got a contact named Cid who may be able to get them that information. And Wrecker wants to know if Cid can be trusted. And Echo basically says, hey, the Jedi trusted Cid. Cid was an informant for the Jedi. That should be good enough for us. And I think it's Tech basically says that the Jedi are dead. So I don't know what, you know, like.
He's so blunt sometimes. And I sometimes really love that side of him, because, and I also really love when he tells Echo that when Echo reveals that he doesn't know the informant personally, I love when Tech says, oh, that's information we could have used earlier.
Yeah.
And it's like, Tech, you are also known for keeping withholding information.
Yeah.
And when it comes to very important topics, like the inhibitor chips, like,
yeah,
he just assumed everyone else knew what he was talking about.
I do love the tension between Tech and Echo.
Yes.
You can feel that they don't really like each other, because although I think what you said last week was absolutely correct, one of them's like the software and one of them's like the hardware. I think that there's like a frenemy thing going on with Tech and Echo, because they kind of overlap in some spaces, right?
Yeah,
of like, how can I be more important to the crew, the Bad Batch? How, you know what I'm saying? So it's like they're competing a little bit of a rivalry.
Yeah. Yeah. They definitely butt heads a lot. And it reminds me of that character whose name I don't remember, but in The Phantom Menace, the two-headed announcer. That's
that's me and Mac.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yes, they're always arguing with each other. I love that. that's good. So Omega replies with her comlink just a few feet away when they're talking about this, right after she was told not to play with it and she's been playing with it. And in her defense, it would be pretty cool to have one of those things, right? Like this, she's a kid. She didn't even know what dirt was, you know? So like, of course a comlink is going to just be amazing to her. It's a walkie-talkie. Everybody loves
exactly.
A walkie-talkie.
It's a walkie-talkie or like a cell phone and for the modern kids out there. but yeah, I really love seeing that side of her being excited to not just have this very cool device, but I think it's also a step closer to being part of the Bad Batch. Yes. Like she wants to be a Bad Batcher. And we see that with the Clone Trooper doll that she customizes later on. And that's her, I feel like that's her, she's putting everything that she wants to be through that doll. And that's the representation of what she wants to be moving forward, a Bad Batcher.
That is a perfect way to put that. Yeah, it's like she feels like a part of the crew now that she has that. That's a great way to look at it that way. So they land on Ord Mantell City and they make their way through a very shady, seedy looking street into an underground cantina. Now, like I've said before, I love the environments on this show. I think the environments look really cool. And again, they've done a very fantastic job with Ord Mantell because I don't want to go there. That's not a place I want to be walking because it's very... Even in the daylight, I'm like, I don't
yeah,
be there.
I honestly feel like I've lived there for 30 years because that's New York City through and through. It was New York City and the alleyway. It's like, I know I've been there. I totally walked through an alleyway just to cut, you know, get through a shortcut and whatnot. So yeah, it's felt like home.
Ord Mantell. There you go. So they make it into this cantina and Echo isn't exactly sure who they're looking for. They just know that they're looking for an informant named Sid because he's never actually met Sid. And then Hunter approaches a green Trandoshan and asks about Sid. And she doesn't seem interested in helping them at all. And also, I just wanted to kind of point out here, I do like that the designs of the Trandoshans are subtly changing to the way that we saw them in The Mandalorian. The snouts are getting a little smaller. Like Bosk has a big snout, right? But in The Mandalorian, the Trandoshans that attack Din in Chapter 2, they have kind of a smaller, flatter face. And Sid kind of has that same thing going on. I like that there's... You know, they're kind of referencing.
Yeah. And you see that also pop up in Star Wars Rebels towards the end in season 4 when they're invading that. I forget what it is now. But yeah, they meet a few Trandoshans in there. And there's the traditional design and then the more slinky one that has a smaller snout and whatnot. So yeah, I really like seeing the variety within the Trandoshans.
Me too. They're a cool species in Star Wars that, you know, we get a lot on them, obviously, in the Clone Wars and stuff. But I'd like to see more in Star Wars because they're pretty interesting. So in the background of this cantina, we see an Ithorian fighting another alien. I would not want to be that alien because I would not want to fight an Ithorian. I know it's not canon, but the old Clone Wars cartoon, that Ithorian Jedi that was able to like push people out with like the sound of its. Yeah. I would not want to be anywhere near an Ithorian fighting them when that happens.
Yeah, I don't think I would survive that encounter.
No. Speak of aliens, I want to see more of Ithorians. I love Ithorians. They start to debate on whether they're in the right place or not, and that maybe Sid fled when they heard what happened to the Jedi. And while they're getting agitated with each other, like, you know, people do, Omega approaches the Trandoshan at the bar and figures out very quickly that she is Sid, and Sid's impressed with her. And Sid's like, you're the brains of the operation. Now, do you think there's anything to Omega figuring that out, or is just like Omega just was able to see past what they could not get past?
Yeah, it's definitely that. She was just able to pick up on the fact that Sid was using a toolbox to fix the machine that was there. It was a coin machine. And she just put together that this is either the owner or you know, someone who is related to the owner. And I love how she picked that up very quickly. Yeah. And it's because my mom mentioned that it's because the Bad Batch have some preconceived notions of what the owner should look like. It should probably, it sounds like a man. Maybe that's who we should be looking for. This is a woman. And Omega didn't have any of those preconceived notions.
Yeah, that's, I like that. That's a great point by your mom. Way to go. So Omega lets them know that she found Cid, and then Cid takes them into her secret storeroom. And this place is a place that I think Ezra Bridger would absolutely love to be in. There's a ton of items of note in this storeroom. There's a Mandalorian helmet on the wall. To me, it kind of looked like a white Mandalorian helmet. There's several clone helmets. And Jonah Marie, you pointed out just a little bit before this that there's a pair of blasters, kind of like what Jango has, up on the wall as well.
Yeah. I got to thank the Boba Fett fan club for sending that out over their Twitter, because I did not spot that. And it's just so dark in there. Like, you had to brighten up the settings there to be able to see it. But one other thing that caught my attention too about that scene was that one of the paintings behind Cid's desk, it looks like the Trandoshan moon where Ahsoka was transported to in Padawan Lost.
Yes.
And the reason I think it's a moon, it's that moon, is because the terrain has these tall, sharp peaks that sort of curve at the top. And I went back to the episode and made sure that that was actually it. And it looks a lot alike it, So it made me think, okay, so what if these helmets aren't, because originally I thought, what if they're not gifts? What if they are gifts, you know, from having made friends, but what if they're actually trophies? Like, what if these are clone troopers or Mandalorians that were taken to the moon to be hunted? And, you know, and it could give us a hint as to maybe that maybe she can't be fully trusted.
I love that theory. That's why, Jonah Marie, you're awesome. That is a wonderful theory, because that would totally make sense.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I was saying earlier, I think we should explore Trandoshans more, because you see things like that happen in the Clone Wars. You know, they're hunting on their planet. It's very possible, like you said, that those helmets are actually like trophies.
Yeah. In a hunt. Much the way that you would put the head of a buffalo or whatever creature is out there that people hunt for sport nowadays, sadly. So yeah, it could possibly be that.
Oh no, the Bad Batch. What are they doing? Like, I'm worried now. I'm worried if they're going to be taking missions from her.
It's true. It might be true.
I like that theory a lot. So, that's going to blow my mind. Cid said that the informant business has changed since the Empire has come into power, and that she's never had clone deserters come to her before, which kind of goes to your theory a little bit. Like, she didn't say she's never had clones come to her before, just not clone deserters.
Yeah.
Tech explains that they had a different ideology than the rest of the clones. I guess that's one way to put it. Cid is ready to get to business, and Echo inserts his arm in Cid's terminal, and an image of Fennec Shand appears, and Hunter wants to know who she is, but more importantly, who is she working for, right? Because, like, they could take care of Fennec Shand if they have to, but that doesn't stop the problem, right?
Right.
Because whoever's coming after them is going to keep sending bounty hunters after them.
So true. So my question to you, and I keep asking this to everyone I get the chance to talk about with Bad Batch, but my question to you is, why do you think that the Bad Batch haven't connected the dots back to the Kaminoans? Because they should know, or have in the back of their minds, that they're property of the Empire, Republic, now turned Empire. So there's a chance that because they stole this kid, that maybe it's the Kaminoans who are wanting her back. And it's just so interesting to me that they haven't retraced their steps and tried to think, oh, maybe the Kaminoans, maybe we should investigate that angle. So I'm curious what your thoughts are that they haven't approached that as a possibility.
That is a great question, because it makes you ask, what is the relationship between clones and the Kaminoans? I just finished the Republic Commando novel, the first one. Now, that's not canon, but it does a good job of giving you insight into the clones' perspective of, like, even like the fact that they didn't have parents who raised them. And a lot of times it was like people coming in to train them that's like the only parental figures that they have. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if they kind of see the Kaminoans as parental type figures. And so there's just some sort of inherent trust that they have of the Kaminoans that they should not have.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah, it could be that. And so I just found it funny. And maybe it goes back to the whole Omega's the brains of the operation here.
That's true.
Because they're not putting it together. Or it could be that Tech is just withholding this information as well. Yeah. Like, he's aware, but no one's asked him.
Right. Right. Or maybe it's a thing where they're just trying to figure out, okay, it's probably the Kaminoans, but if there's other people after us, we definitely need to know that. That's a possibility as well. Mm-hmm. So Cid is willing to find out the information for them, but first they need to do something for her. And this whole setup, this whole episode is very similar to The Mandalorian in the sense of, hey, you got this big overarching sort of narrative that's happening, but each episode there's like these little things that they have to do to get to the thing that they're trying to get to or achieve or something. It's a very video game type concept with this show, right? Like a side quest.
Yeah. And I really love that with the overall arc that they have these individual adventures that connect to that, where they're supplementing some information along the way, and just character development overall too. Yeah. Especially with, I'm sure we'll touch on it, but Wrecker and his head hurting again. So it's like they're definitely touching on these bigger things that we'll see later on while still having that individual adventure side quest.
Yeah. I'm definitely worried about Wrecker, by the way.
I'm so worried. So worried.
So the Bad Batch are learning that they're no longer in the military in this scene as well. And Cid basically points out, hey, this is what mercenaries do. And that's basically what you guys are now. You're mercenaries, not necessarily bounty hunters, but mercenaries. So that's kind of a cool thing that we haven't seen really a focus on in Star Wars before, of like, okay, this is a mercenary unit now.
Yeah. I really love the A-team sort of foundation that's there with the whole mercenary thing. And yeah, we haven't really seen that side. I mean, we saw that episode way back with Boba Fett and the episode called Bounty, but it was mainly focused on bounty hunters.
Right.
So the whole mercenary aspect, like, how does that make them different from bounty hunters?
Yeah.
I guess they're just handling just general missions rather than finding someone specific. It's an interesting angle to pursue in this show.
Yeah. It's not like person specific, you know, like it could be anything. It could be blow up this place or, like whatever the A-team.
Something Wrecker would absolutely love.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what is their assignment? Their assignment is find a missing kid named Moochie. And Moochie was taken by Zygerian slavers, and they're on the other side of the planet. And if they do this, they'll get the info that they need about this bounty hunter that is after them. And so they eventually come to terms. And so on the flight over to the other side of the planet, Wrecker is once again complaining about his head. And we all officially should be worried for Wrecker at this point.
Yeah, I am definitely worried. Although I am... Part of me just wants to let it happen. Like, whatever is going to happen, let it. Here's the reason why, though. Here's the reason why. Because I want to, once they remove it, because obviously I don't think they're going to kill off Wrecker. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. But I want them to, when they remove the chip, I want to hear his experience. Like, what was going through his head when it took over? Because for Rex, we didn't get a chance to sit down and hear what it was that he experienced. You know, the moment they took off that chip, he had to pull out his blaster to start shooting at clone troopers. Tup unfortunately passed away, and he talked about a nightmare, if I remember correctly, that they all share. And like, I want to hear Wrecker's experience if he does get taken over by the inhibitor chip. And so that's the only reason why I would want it, just so that we can have a little bit of research there to look into it.
Yeah, further. That makes sense. It's just, you hope he doesn't do anything that he, you know,
will regret. Yeah.
Right. I could see a situation though where Wrecker, the inhibitor chip takes over and he joins Crosshair for a while. And then you've got like really a truly split team, and that's Wrecker on the bad guy side. That is going to be tough to deal with, because this guy's basically the Incredible Hulk. I mean, we see that in this episode later when he's wrestling a Rancor to exhaustion. He's the Incredible Hulk. It's incredible. So, so Tech explains that the slavers are using old Ord Mantell City as their base of operations. I do like the design of this place. It's awesome. It's very John Carter-esque. It's really, really cool. It's ancient, it feels like. Then they have to explain what slaves are to Omega. And I love that she doesn't need to be told that something isn't right. She knows that. Like, she's got to be told what dirt is, all these different things, because she's never experienced it. But inherently, she knows that is not right.
Yeah,
I love that.
I really, really love that that was her natural inclination and figuring out that that was wrong. Yeah. And I also love that she's holding her clone trooper doll as she's talking about it. And she kind of hugs it a little bit closer to herself. And I think in the back of her mind, she might be putting together the fact that the clone troopers are, in a way, slaves to the Empire, to, you know, previously the Republic. And her holding that doll kind of symbolizes to me that, yeah, she's sort of aware of it, or I kind of wish that they could have gone deeper into that conversation. But for what it was, I just thought it was symbolically just heartbreaking.
Yeah, that is a great point. Yeah, because in a way, the clones are kind of like slaves. Especially when they don't have a choice in anything that they do. And she vows to free Muchi at that point. And she's just awesome. I love her. And the Bad Batch arrive and they scout out the area and they see a young Faline girl, which, if you're not familiar with that species, that's basically Prince Shizor of the old Shadows of the Empire tie-in that they did before the special edition stuff. I remember that as a kid. I thought that stuff was awesome. Big Dash Rendar fan right here. Which should not shock anyone.
I don't really know much about the character, but yeah, the moment I saw the kid, I thought, oh, I know people are going to be making this reference on social media.
Yes. Prince Shizor. He is he is something. so yeah, they assume that this Faline girl is Muchi. And that's what we're led to believe. And then Wrecker wants to know if this will be a smash and grab mission like they once did on Quate, which is a shipyard planet. And Omega is ready for the action, but Hunter orders her back to the ship. She cannot come along for this portion of the mission. And he's just being a protective dad at that point, right?
Yeah, and I really love that she actually pays attention. She actually obeyed him and stayed and didn't do anything to endanger the mission.
She's not Ezra. She's not Ezra.
And that's the other thing that I love about Ezra, is that he would have been a little bit more aware of what was happening instead of, you know, having the Zygarians enter the ship and then finding out that something was wrong.
Yes, yeah. Omega's super innocent in that kind of stuff, right? Like, Ezra is a little more street smart because he grew up on the streets. That's, you know, his background. That's where he came from. Lothal, the streets of Lothal. Now that sounds like a cool musical. That can
it does.
Streets of Lothal.
I can see it being the name of a rap album or something.
Streets of Lothal. Ezra Bridger. Omega goes back and the rest of the crew go out to rescue Muchi, but of course things don't go as planned and they're attacked. And back in Sid's secret room, she's contacted by Bib Fortuna. And this was shocking. Like, it didn't show him totally in this scene, but you knew right away who this was. This is Jabba the Hutt's right-hand man.
I was shocked.
That Boba Fett kills.
Yeah.
In the end of The Mandalorian.
I was so surprised that he showed up. And in the back of my mind, I thought, that should be Bib Fortuna. That would be so hilarious if it was Bib Fortuna. And it turned out to be the case. And yeah. I really love how they slip that character in.
Me too.
And I hope that with other appearances coming down the line, that they're just as smoothly slipped in there as this one.
Remind me at the end of this episode, I do have something to say about Bib Fortuna being in the show and what it could mean for other characters being in the show as well, because his introduction introduces even a bigger underworld element to the Bad Batch. Because, you know, Jabba is like the king of the underworld at this point, right?
That's true. Very true.
So like at this point, I'm still thinking Moochie is that Fallen girl. There's some sort of connection to the Black Sun, like you mentioned, because Prince Shizor, that's what he was in charge of in the old legend stuff as Black Sun. So I'm thinking, oh, that's who this is. And then Cid explains that this sort of stuff requires planning. She has her best people on it to be patient. They're going to get her back.
Cut then, to the Bad Batch not having this under control.
Yeah, it's great. On the ship, Omega is working on her clone trooper doll, and she's turning it into the colors of the Bad Batch while Gonki is watching her. Love that droid. Gonki has a personality, you know, for a Gonk droid. He definitely has a personality.
Yeah. I really love how when Omega told Gonki to hide, it was just trying to find a place to be able to before it finally hunkered down.
Yes, it's very fun. And I love that he's like Wrecker's workout equipment all the time too. Just like Wrecker's always doing something in the background with Gonki to lift weights. So
we all need a Gonk to be able to lift weights, you know?
Listen, that would be awesome. That somebody should market that. That would be... Yeah. Pretty cool.
It's summertime, you know, so
gotta get those beach bodies ready. Then some slavers make their way onto the ship, and Omega and Gonki hide. Like you said, Gonki's like looking around and then just settles down, and she manages to sneak out of the ship, and then she tries to contact them, but there's no reply. And back with the group, Hunter gets concerned because they don't have their equipment, and he wants to make sure that they somehow get in contact with Omega so she doesn't get captured. But as he's saying that, as they're talking about this, she's already crawling towards them on the cables above, and they spot her. And this, again, I want to parallel it to Star Wars Rebels a lot, because there's a lot of parallels with, I feel like, Omega and Ezra. They just have different personalities in terms of how they interact with their crew. Like when Omega's doing it, they're like, oh, thank God. But like, I can imagine a situation where Kanan and Zeb are like, oh no, here yes. comes Ezra.
Yes. So accurate. Very accurate reaction. Yeah. And I really love that with her little backpack climbing on top of the buildings. It really reminded me of Ezra with his backpack climbing on top of the buildings.
Yes.
And I love that Tech continues to spot Omega when she is doing something that maybe she shouldn't be doing. Like, mm-hmm. you know, in this episode, he spots her. And then in the cut and run episode, she escapes with the chain codes. And then again, he spots her and says, found her. And then in the first episode, when they enter the cell, he's the one to announce, oh, she's right here with us.
Yeah. that informs you a lot about Tech, though. He's super observant of, and he cares about her in his own way.
Yeah.
You know, like he might be a little more distant than the rest of them, but he does care about her because he's observant of where she is at all times.
Right.
So I like that. So then we get the slaver's leader. He comes, his name's Rainy, I believe. Is that right?
You know, I didn't check, or at least I don't remember it.
I looked it up. I think it's Rainy, and he inspects them, and Echo says that the Republic has outlawed slavery. Like, what are they even doing this sort of thing? But we even know back in The Phantom Menace, slavery was still going on, even under the Republic. It's just... did the Republic care enough to look?
Yeah. Yeah. And even in the most recent arc with Rafa and, Trace and Rafa, Trace. Yep. Where they encounter the many slaves that are working to get the material that they end up picking up. And, you know, with the Jedi, they are so distracted by the war that they don't see all of the bad stuff that's happening under the table and in other secret places. And unfortunately, that's what makes them even more of that puts them more in a negative light, because they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing outside of the war. They're so distracted by that. And it's because of Palpatine. That was his plan all along. Make them look like the bad guys.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that is a great point by you. Well, I mean, yes, they're just, like you said, they're just so distracted by the war. They're losing sight of what's really important. And that's the people. So the crew is able to communicate to her that they need their equipment, and Omega tries to go for it. And as she's climbing down, one of the rocks gets loose and it's about to be a distraction until Wrecker makes an even bigger distraction. So Omega can jump onto a very large cage, and we start to figure out, okay, there's a Rancor in here. And Omega seizes the opportunity and lets a baby Rancor, even though it's baby, it's still pretty vicious, out of its cage, and chaos just ensues. And in the chaos, the Bad Batch are able to get free of their shackles and make for the Falling Girl and the other two with her. And that's when they're told that the girl isn't Moochie, but the Rancor is.
What a way to subvert expectations, you know?
Yeah, I know.
I really love that change in flipping the script.
Yes. And I do want to just address real quick, because I know that there was some chatter about this, about like some people being upset if this was the Rancor that Luke Skywalker kills in Return of the Jedi or not. At the end of the day, I don't think it actually matters if it is or not.
It's there not, could, thankfully.
Yeah, there could be more Rancors in Jabba's palace. There's not just one. Right.
Yeah.
I think people just forget that. Like, I love the connections that they make in Star Wars sometimes, but it does like tend to bring out like anxiety in people sometimes too, of like, oh no, I hope it's not it. You know, so it's a different one.
Yeah, it is, thankfully. Because Moochie is just too sweet and cute. Yes.
Yeah.
For yeah, some, that would be I
sad.
Know.
That'd be sad. So Hunter and Rainey fight, and it's cool because the Zygarians have like basically lightsaber whips. I don't know if they're technically like lightsaber type things, because if they were, they would cut through you, but they can wrap around you, they can hurt you, they can stun you, those type of things.
Yeah,
this is
imagine,
a really cool fight.
Yeah, I imagine it's sort of like the energy bow, where it's like an energy whip in that sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And so while this is that fight's happening, Echo and Omega rescue the other slaves. And in the process, Omega picks up one of the crossbows, and that's going to be her weapon, I assume, for the rest of the series. And that's really cool. There you go. It's on your shirt.
Yeah, she has it there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I definitely had to grab that the moment I saw it. And it's funny, because going into this episode, you know, we don't know the title. We don't know anything about it. So I couldn't help but speculate. And I thought, well, because Omega encountered that bounty hunter, maybe she or the Bad Batch or together want her to have a weapon so that she can protect herself if need be. And I love that she picked that up herself. And now she's going to be in a position to.
All right. I'll keep going. And let's see if Joan and Marie can get back into the stream or not. I hope she can. So, yeah, we've got Omega. She's got the crossbow now. She's got the crossbow now, and that's her weapon. Like Joan and Marie was saying, I think that's super exciting, because the weapon is super cool. She's like the new Crosshair, like Joan and Marie was saying before her computer froze, I think. So hopefully she's going to be able to get back in here. I want to check and make sure. There she is. There she is. Let me get the branding right now. Oh, There you are. Okay, so we've got the crossbow. Omega's got the crossbow, which is incredible. And eventually, we've got Hunter who beats, he beats Rainey in the fight. And then we get this awesome monster battle that happens between, I believe this thing is called a Brezak. It kind of looks like the...
A Brezak, yeah.
Brezak. Thank you. It kind of looks like a Zillow beast a little bit in the face. To me, it looked like a Zillow beast, but that's just me. And then we also have the Rancor fighting. And this is like, to me, I think it's one of the... Maybe the first monster battle that we've seen in Star Wars. I'm trying to think of when I've seen two monsters fight like this in Star Wars. And I can't recall anything off the top of my head. But the Brezak and Rancor fight was pretty cool. I enjoyed it. What about you, Jonah Marie?
Yeah, that was a really great fight. And I don't recall seeing anything like that before, at least not recently. The one we've lost.
Yeah, it's to me, you're good. You're good. You're good. It's kind of like
this.
You're good. If you need to leave for a second and then come back, you can. It's totally fine. Everybody understands? It's the internet.
Yeah.
It happens.
I'll do that.
Okay. Cool. While we're waiting on Joan and Marie to come back, let's go ahead and do some questions while we're waiting. Because I want her to be able to finish the thing with us. So if you've got any questions, go ahead and shoot them into the chat. And then we can talk about them a lot. Thomas says, yes, very Zillow Beast-like. I agree. It reminded me of the Zillow Beast a lot. What's a planet that you hope to see in the Bad Batch? That's a great question. I mean, I always want to see Coruscant because I love Coruscant, but in terms of other planets, I don't know. Mandalore. There we go. I want to see Mandalore in the Bad Batch. I would love to see what's happening on Mandalore. Why didn't that come to me right away? Of course, I would love to see what's happening on Mandalore. Jawas are eating Jonah Marie's internet cords. That happens. That happens to the best of us sometimes. That it's very possible that's exactly what's happening. Where they're scavenging them. Nar Shaddaa. Nar Shaddaa would be a great planet to visit in the Bad Batch. If you're listening on the podcast, what just happened is some internet troubles. I'm taking some questions right now in the meantime until she can return, if she's able to, because, you know, that happens sometimes. It happens to the best of us. It's the internet, you know. It happens. It's a live stream. It's live. It's exciting. It's the drama. This is what we live for. There's stuff like this. Gotta think on your toes. All right. Okay. So, let's see what else. Mandalore, Nar Shaddaa. Yeah, internet. That's exactly right. Internet especially doesn't like cooperating when you're trying to do things. That's 100% accurate. Jonah Marie, she's back. Let's see.
Hey. So is it okay?
Yes, it's okay. Perfect. It's great.
I profusely apologize.
That is not your fault. Like that happened. I can't tell you how many times that happens with me and Mac while we're recording. It happens to me literally almost every time we record. And you know, it's the internet. What do you expect?
That's true.
That's what happens. All right, so let's jump back into it. We didn't move on. I just took like two questions.
Oh,
and then one was, what planet do you want to see in the Bad Batch next? And then we talked a little bit about the internet. So You didn't miss much. So the Brezak and Rancor, they fight. And then basically the Rancor wins that battle. And then by the end of it, Wrecker steps into the ring and basically fights it until exhaustion, which is just hilarious to me.
It was definitely a funny way for him to just be able to have that alpha status. Yep. And I'm so worried that maybe that tumbling situation might have messed even more with his chip. And now I feel like it's just ever closer, that moment that maybe he's just going to be slipping into that Order 66 mode.
I hope not. I'm so worried. And we'll get to that towards the end. I do want to talk about what we think is coming next in the Bad Batch, because we don't have that much left from the trailer that we've seen. I don't think. Mm-hmm. So yeah, basically he wrestles it until exhaustion. And then we switch back to Sid's office, and Bib Fortuna and some Gamorrean guards approach to receive Mucci. And now that the job is done, they go back inside and are able to get the information from Sid. Now, according to Sid's sources in the Bounty Hunters Guild, which I want to pause right there, that is a bit, we get from the sense from Aftermath, Star Wars Aftermath, that the Bounty Hunters Guild is a new thing in that time period. But it seems like the Bounty Hunters Guild has been around, or maybe different versions of it have been around in the galaxy for a while.
Yeah, that sounds like it's the case, like a different iteration.
Yes. Okay. And that makes me wonder, and we'll go ahead and talk about this. That makes me wonder if we're going to see people like Greef Karga show up in the Bad Batch.
That would be pretty cool. A young Greef Karga, sort of like how we've seen Saw Gerrera through the years. That would be pretty awesome.
I would love that. Not only that, we get to see him be like a failed magistrate of where he was, you know, maybe the Bad Batch were involved in that.
Oh, that's so cool. I would love to see that storyline. Yeah, I totally forgot the magistrate part too.
Yeah, wow. Like he was a failed leader of his, I don't think it was Nevarro, it was a different planet, I think. And he failed at being a leader. And that's kind of when he fell in with the Bounty Hunters Guild and kind of turned to the dark side for a while before being redeemed by the cuteness of Grogu. That's what brought him back.
So the power of Grogu is cuteness.
He's got a lot of power. So according to Sid's sources in the Bounty Hunters Guild, they learn that the bounty hunter is named Fennec Shand and that she's working on direct commission. But they don't exactly know from who, right? It's not like an open thing, right? So direct commission means she got the job assigned to her specifically from whoever is pursuing this, which we assume is the Kaminoans, but it could be somebody else. I mean, that possibility is still on the table. We also learned that she's new to the scene of bounty hunting in this scene, which makes sense. She's 28 years younger than what she is in The Mandalorian.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
And I love the idea. And I think we touched on it last week where her approaching Omega in such a kind-hearted way is probably a tactic because she doesn't know how else to do it. And it's just, she's just in her novice years and doesn't want to attack head on and possibly make things worse. Right. So it's better to attract with honey and whatnot. So, but it's still very clever the way she approached it.
Absolutely. Yeah. She's got a lot of wisdom about her, and how she approaches things, except with Toro Calican. It seems like there's some sort of blind spot that she had for Toro, maybe how attractive that guy is, or I don't know. I don't know what it is, but
the 51st minute is where we 51st minute is where we got the Toro Calican mention.
Ah, oh, Toro. Sid makes the comment that they'll need friends and money to get out of the trouble that they find themselves in. And so to me, it seems like a partnership seems to be budding between Sid and the Bad Batch. It seems like to me, she's going to be giving them missions from here on out. Maybe not every episode, but she's definitely going to be a very grief cargo like figure to the Bad Batch, is kind of how I'm taking it. And then that's the end of the episode.
Yeah. Although Hunter's expression leads me to believe that they'll keep their distance for now.
Yeah.
And because there's that possibility that maybe if Fennec is on their tail, if Fennec talks to Sid, there's the possibility where Sid might want cut of the pay if she tells them whereabouts they are, that they were here. So I feel like Hunter's just going to keep his distance for a bit, but if money is needed down the line, which I'm sure it will be needed, then that's when they'll go back and have no choice but to take up another mission.
Right. So here's what my question is for you is, okay, there's not much left in the trailer that we've got in terms of the scenes we've seen. One of the big scenes was Hunter fighting the Zygarians and stuff. And is Rex just around the corner is basically what I'm asking, because he seems like the last big thing from that trailer that we have not seen yet.
Yeah, definitely. I think Rex is the next big thing. And I think that's the case because of the fact that they highlighted Wrecker's pain in the head. And we didn't see that reference last week. So I think the fact that they emphasized on it shows that that's where we're headed next. And they didn't touch on the scanner that Tech was working on. So I'm hoping they'll touch on that again. So the scanner, the pain in the head, I think it's all leading to Rex appearance.
Do you think that's next week?
I think so. I hope so. I would really like it to be the case. Yeah. If not, I can see it being a stepping stone toward that direction, because they don't really know where he is. So they would first need to find some breadcrumbs and hopefully meet up with him. But I imagine they can do that very quickly and have that happen next week.
Yeah. It does kind of remind me a little bit of The Mandalorian, even in that sense of like when he's looking for Ahsoka or the Jedi or anything like that. And I could see maybe one or two episodes of them trying to find Rex and then finally finding Rex and getting into contact with him. But I'm very curious to see once they find Rex, then what happens, because then it's pretty much everything we've seen from the trailer is from that portion of the show, I guess, you know, the first six or seven episodes or so. And then we have no idea what's going to happen after that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so curious. I know there were also appearances of Raxus, I believe, in that trailer. Raxus. And they were in an AT-ST, I want to say. No, that's not what it was. An ATTE. An ATTE. And they ended up shooting at another AT vehicle. And there were clones in there. And I feel like they're going to take up another mission that leads them there. And I forget what else we saw in that. But with the Rex, they end up going to that shipyard planet. And I heard that it's the same planet as Cal Kestis's origin. So when I heard that, I freaked out as well.
No way, that is awesome.
If that turned out to be the case, that would be amazing. But what a great way to, you know, slip in another reference in there. But it looks very much like it, and I am not sure what they would be doing there. What are they trying to get? Maybe they need a different ship. I have no idea. Or maybe they need something, because those big ships had medical labs. Yeah. So maybe that's where they need to go for the chip. Maybe they need to go back to Kamino. I don't know. And they need a different kind of ship to be able to infiltrate Kamino. Yeah. There's so many possibilities.
Okay. So that makes me think, though, even with the, it's not, it's not an AT-AT, but it's like the Republic version of it before they, you know,
upgrade. Yeah, and I forget the designation.
Yeah, me too. But that thing, remember in Rebels, of course you do, when all the clones are in that, that could be the same one.
It could be, yeah.
Maybe that's the origin of where they kind of get that. We'll see.
We will. And I'm super, yeah. And it's ATT. Thank gosh I got it right.
There you go.
But yeah, I am excited to see all of these other connections, because that's one thing that I really applaud the show in, where they insert references so seamlessly. And they're just so much fun to pick out if you're like a huge fan of the lore and of past parts of the franchise. And they're so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, Jonah Marie, we'll start off with this question that was asked when you were working on your internet. What planet would you like to see in the Bad Batch? If you could pick a planet, I said Coruscant at first. I was like, I love Coruscant. Why not? And then I ended up on, wait a second, Mandalore. I want to see Mandalore. Of course I want to see Mandalore. What about you?
Yeah, that is a great question. And, you know, I got to go to my rebel roots here and say Lothal. Like, I would love to see Lothal as it's entering its imperial age, because I just think that would be a very cool way to maybe even just put Mira Bridger and Ephraim Bridger in the background. That would be so cool. It would make my heart so happy to see them. And yeah, that's the planet that I really want to see, or at least its sister planet, anything in the Lothal sector, really.
Well, I was about to say, what is that other planet that they go to a lot in season two? That's just, I would live there.
Yeah.
That,
I believe it's Garel.
That's it. Garel.
Yeah.
I love that planet. That planet's really cool.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Okay. Here's another question for us. We're in our question portion, so go ahead and send those questions in. But we have serious question. Do you guys think Ahsoka will be with Rex? And will we see Rex and Ahsoka's goodbye before Rebels?
Ah, that's a fantastic question. And yeah, we don't know the... I'm pretty sure... If we're taking the Ahsoka novel into account... Yeah. Then I think she's already left, and she's gone on her own exile path to find herself again, because she is in that very emotional state where everything's gone and she needs to rediscover what it means to be who she is. You know, she's someone who helps no matter what.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's the journey that she's on. So I think Rex is by himself at this point, and he might be in the mindset of trying to get other clones to leave the Empire. Who knows? So I think they're separated at this point in time.
I agree with you. I don't think Ahsoka will be around. Now, it's possible that they may run into her on her own. That's totally possible. I don't think she's with Rex right now. I agree with you on that. I think while you were saying all that, I was thinking too of who else we might see. Trace and Rafa do kind of seem like likely candidates for the Bad Batch to run into. I could see something like that happening as well, because, you know, those were two characters that we were introduced to in the final season of the Clone Wars. I could see them coming back.
Oh yeah. That would be great. Especially if they're in the place where they want to help, like they've seen what Ahsoka was trying to say about the Jedi and how the idea of them has been twisted. So maybe they are in the place where there's the early, the fledgling rebellion starting to take place. Yep. I mean, we saw Saw have his own little group of fighters, rebel fighters on his planet. So it's possible that we could see Trace and Rafa take up that same path.
I would love to see Infus Nest's mom. Like, you know, because Infus Nest, I feel like, might be a little too young at this point in time, but her mom, right? Like, she's the one that kind of like trained her, gave her the helmet and stuff, Am I correct?
Fascinating.
Yeah,
I think so. You know, I haven't watched it that recently to remember.
But. I'm pretty sure that's the lineage. Like she picked up where mom left off in terms of the marauders and stuff like that. So that would be cool to see Infis Nest in any capacity because she's really awesome. I would really like that. Do you think we might get Paul Bettany as Dryden Voss? He's certainly around Disney right now. We kind of talked about that a little bit last week. I think it's possible.
Yeah. Yeah. I know he might like to do it just because he returned as Vision in WandaVision. So I think he might want to return as Dryden Voss, especially given his fate in Solo. So yeah, I can totally see that happening. If not, I can also see Matthew Wood doing the voice because he's just morphs his voice into everything. Yeah. And it's just so cool.
He's really good at that. All right. Do you think the Bad Batch could encounter Boba? Do you think they would view him as a reg or something different than all of them? That's a great question.
Great questions tonight. Oh, wow. What do you think while I try to...
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it all depends on... And we got a question about what we think the Book of Boba Fett will be about. I think it all depends on what the Book of Boba Fett is about because... I'm fully expecting that show to dive into flashbacks. I could totally see something where it's Boba pre using the Mandalorian armor, still kind of in that Clone Wars phase that we saw him in last. I guess technically in the book, Dark Disciple is the last time we actually saw him in the timeline at this point. So I don't know. It's possible because that would be very interesting to see Boba and Omega interact. I think that's the key to that whole scene if that happens.
Yeah, especially if that whole theory that Omega represents the sister that Django had in Legends, and I think that would be fascinating to see a younger Django/Boba, and then, yep, you know, Omega right beside him. Mm-hmm. I think they would see him as a reg, sort of like how they see Cut as a reg, like as a defector. They might think that he's also defected from the army, from the Republic army. So maybe once they get talking, depending on how they meet, maybe they're just bumping heads because they're also on the same mission or something, or maybe they get in the way of Boba Fett's bounty, who knows. But I can imagine them thinking that he is a reg and that he's somehow escaped.
Yep. And I could see Boba playing it off like he was too. You know,
oh,
like
maybe.
Not telling them. Yeah. Like I'm not Boba. You know, he would just kind of play it off too. I could totally see something like that happening. This is a great question. Think we'll get a full episode of Bad Batch following only Crosshair and the Imps. I think that's possible, especially since Crosshair wasn't in this episode. I could see a whole episode from his perspective for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very similar to the things that we've seen in Rebels. I want to say there was also an episode where we saw it through Kallus's perspective. Maybe I'm imagining that I just wanted that to happen, but yeah, I do think that we're going to get more of his perspective and what he's dealing with, but a full episode would be very insightful.
Yeah. I mean, I know we're really excited for Rex showing up, but I'm kind of hoping that next week we do see something like that. Crosshair's perspective of like, what was he doing while they were doing this mission? That would be interesting to me. And plus we'd probably get more Vice Admiral Rampart. And turns out I think I'm stanning him now. So, okay. So, let's see. Ooh, Purge Troopers in the Bad Batch, which, if you know, you're listening and you're not aware, some Purge Troopers, it's been revealed, are clones, which Purge Troopers are the troopers that we see in Jedi Fallen Order that are hunting Jedi down, specifically Cal, the main character. And it's, I think it's been revealed in the latest Darth Vader comic that a lot of these purge troopers are former clones. And that might tie in a little bit to what the Kaminoans are planning. That might be what they are providing for the Empire in an effort to stay relevant.
That is a fantastic point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. One last question, and then we're out of here. Who would win in a fight, Bo-Katan and the Night Owls or the Bad Batch?
It has to be Bo-Katan and the Night Owls. I love the Bad Batch.
No question.
Yeah, but there's, I love them, but they've proven themselves to be great assets in a military setting against droids. When it comes to dealing with the ordinary person who is skilled, if not more skilled than them, they're going to lose that fight. And we saw that with Fennec. We saw that with the Sigarians. And against Bo-Katan and her Night Owls, no question, they're going to win that.
Bo-Katan don't play. She, I don't know if you, I mean, obviously everything she's done in the Clone Wars and Rebels, but I mean, she was shanking people in the Mandalorian, on that Gazanti cruiser. She's not someone to mess around with. I'm going to go with Bo-Katan and the Night Owls as well. I think it'd be a good fight. Wrecker makes, I think, a big difference for the Bad Batch, but, you can't beat Bo-Katan, I feel like. So that's who I'm going with as well. Jonah Marie, this has been so much fun. Thank you for joining us for our episode 5 breakdown of Rampage of the Bad Batch. We hope that everybody has enjoyed this. This has been a lot of fun. I cannot wait until next week, breaking down episode 6. Any last thoughts before we head out, Jonah Marie?
Oh man, last thoughts. I just hope that the Bad Batch come through with Wrecker and nothing serious, too serious happens, because Wrecker is a tough guy to take down. So I hope that they're able to get that sorted soon.
Yes, absolutely. Don't forget to check out the Geeky Bubble podcast as well. You guys are awesome. Keep the watch.